are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up and welcome to another Monday edition of Locked On NBA, the biggest stories with the local experts. I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, also host of Locked On Rockets right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, we'll be chatting with Kai Carlin of Locked On Sixers as Joel Embiid has put together an utterly dominant stretch of games. And what are the Sixers going to be doing with Ben Simmons at the NBA trade deadline? Will he stay or will he go? Then we touch base with Brad Rowland of Locked On Hawks as the Hawks have put together seven straight wins, finally getting off to a solid stretch of basketball after a suboptimal start to the season. Are they finally piecing things together defensively in Atlanta? And lastly, we check in with Ed Oliver of Locked On Wizards as the Washington Wizards find themselves in a tailspin, having lost their last five games in a row, including blowing a 35-point lead to the LA Clippers with no Paul George, no Kawhi Leonard. Is it time for the Wizards to move on from Bradley Beal? As always, thank you so much for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. Joining us now is Kai Carlin of Locked On Sixers. Kai, welcome to the program. Let's talk a little Philadelphia 76ers here, sitting at 30-19, number three in the Eastern Conference, 10th in offensive rating, 10th in defensive rating. The Sixers have looked pretty good this year, despite no Ben Simmons in the lineup, in the roster, all the question marks surrounding him. We're going to get to him in just a moment here, but I want to start with Joel Embiid, who's just been an absolute monster this season. And at this point, I think he's my favorite, at least to win the MVP award. He has been so impressive in this recent stretch of games. He had 50 points in 27 minutes, 38 and 31, 42 and 33. I mean, over these last six games, he's averaging almost 39 points an outing, 12 boards, five assists, two blocks. Just how dominant has Joel Embiid been over this recent stretch of games and you know, the season at a whole?
It's been really impressive, Jackson. Like, the whole thing with Joel has always been, can you rely on him? Can you be able to rely on him to play as many games as he possibly can? Can he play the minutes? Can he carry such a heavy load? That was such a huge question mark going into this year, because it was always him and Ben Simmons, right? So now that Ben's out, it's really Joel and Tobias Harris, I mean, for a little bit. But, you know, you can just tell Tobias misses Ben Simmons, but we'll get to that later. But just Joel, his impact on the floor, carrying this team, being a leader for this team, really on both ends of the floor. It's not just him on the offensive end. It's him kind of directing things on the defensive end. He's speaking a bit more. He's talking more, which is something that Joel never really did in the past. I remember specifically going into the bubble. We're all on the Zoom conference call with Joel, and Joel was asked about his leadership, and he said, I lead in practice. I don't speak. I don't talk to these guys. I come to the gym. I go home. You know, so this year you kind of see that there is a difference. He is actually pulling guys to the side. He is directing things out on the floor. He is getting a relationship with his teammates off the floor as well, which is really something you didn't see in the past. So I think he kind of finally understands that what he has to do in order for this team to have success. And you could just see it out on the floor each and every night.
So not just the dominance that we're seeing as far as like the box score numbers, but also just the growth and development as the true leader and face of this Sixers team and franchise.
Yeah, because Jackson, you can always put up big numbers, right? You know, as an NBA player and an NBA star with the talent that Joel Embiid is, you can always have big numbers. But in order to truly take the next step forward as both a leader and as a guy who can lead his team to wins each and every night, be consistent, you have to be able to understand what it's going to take to do that, which means being in the gym constantly, pulling teammates to the side and being a leader, talking to them, being able to take the next step forward on both ends of the floor, talking a bit more, and just really doing everything that pretty much involves leadership. And that's something Joel really didn't understand in the past, and you can just tell that this year he's doing that more and more each and every night. And that's why the Sixers are 30-19, despite the Ben Simmons saga, which is ridiculous, and just everything with the injuries and COVID and everything else.
I'm glad you highlight the Ben Simmons saga, because we've got to talk about that here. I mean, he's been the topic of so much speculation, Kai, most recently linked heavily to the Sacramento Kings. But it apparently, you know, the Kings are going to be turning their attention elsewhere, at least for the time being, based on, you know, the reporting that's out there. Sixers are also reportedly, you know, having their eyes set on potentially James Harden this upcoming summer. So to this point, Kai, what is your assessment of how Daryl Morey and the Sixers organization have handled the Ben Simmons saga to this point? And, you know, in your eyes, is it a mistake to maybe be almost kind of punting on this season or this situation with Simmons in favor of chasing a bigger name this upcoming summer with, you know, the reported links to James Harden?
Well, for me, it was always James Harden. This team was always had their eye on James Harden, and it's because of Daryl Morey's relationship with James from their time with the Houston Rockets. I'm pretty sure we could all figure that out, right? But for me, Jackson, I don't know what to make of it, because you don't want to waste this season from Joel, right? I mean, he's having the best season of his career, and if you could just get him a little bit of help, then we would seriously consider this team to maybe beat a Brooklyn or a Milwaukee or a Miami, because, you know, the Heat are having a great season too, you know, come playoff time. But at this moment in time, nobody's really considering the Sixers as a true title contender, because there's not another star next to Joel. And it does kind of seem that they are wasting this season, because he may be 27, but with all the injuries that he has sustained in his career and that he has had to go through, you never know how long his prime is going to be, right? Like, in my opinion, I don't think his prime is going to be as long as, say, a LeBron James or a Kevin Durant or even Kobe's, you know. Like, Joel's prime isn't going to be all that long. You never know how long Joel is going to be Joel. So it does seem like they're wasting this season. They're punting on it, and then they're going to try again next year. But at the same time, you don't want to just trade Ben Simmons for nothing, because we all know how good he is when his mind is right. So it's a tough situation to, like, really judge on because of all the factors that are at play.
It's definitely a fine line to straddle, you know, risking the short-term potential production if you were to get back even just a little bit of added help for Embiid, versus if you pair up James Harden and Joel Embiid in the Eastern Conference. I mean, that's going to be a perennial contender for as long as those two guys can stay on the floor and stay healthy. But Kai, Tyrese Maxey is a guy who's really stepped up, and he's had an exceptional year. He's helped to fill that Ben Simmons-sized hole in the Sixers roster. Are you at all surprised at the jump that he's made this season? And what has, you know, what's it been like kind of seeing his growth and development up close?
I'm not surprised in terms of him taking a step forward, because the kid's such a gym rat. Like, you could just, the kid's always in the gym. Like, he's always posting on his Instagram story that he's in the Sixers practice facility on an everyday basis. I think it's hilarious. And Doc Rivers always says, like, yo, we're trying to give him a blackout day, and we can't. He's always sneaking his way into the gym. It's annoying. So the jump really isn't a surprise. But really, Jackson, the thing that stands out to me is his 3-point shooting. He went from 30% as a rookie to 40% this season. That's a huge jump. Now, he's only taking, I think, somewhere around 3.5 threes a game. It's not like he's taking him in high volume. But the fact that he's going from 30% to 40% is such a huge it's a huge help, obviously. And, you know, it's kind of a huge difference, considering Ben wouldn't even shoot the ball at the point guard spot. So now that you have a point guard that can actually shoot the ball and drive to the basket and things like that, it's definitely a big help. The thing with Tyrese, though, he's kind of still trying to get down the balance of being a scorer and also getting his teammates involved. You can just see it. There are times where you can just see he's thinking out there too much. I got to get Joel involved. I got to get Tobias the ball, but I also got to get my own bucket. So there's like, his development overall has been impressive, but there are still little things here and there that he has to improve on defensively as well.
Last thing here, Kai, what's the latest on Shake Milton and his injury situation?
Now, Doc says he can still beat Shake in a race. So I'm pretty sure that just kind of tells you how long Shake still has to go. It's a back injury. I think we both know how tricky back injuries can be. So the Sixers are going to try to, you know, push. They're not going to push him too much. They're going to try to just ease him back into it and just see what he can do. But they definitely miss him in terms of having another ball handler out there.
Kai, you're going to have us covered for everything Sixers over at Locked On Sixers with co-host Keith Pompey. As always, appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
I appreciate that, Jackson. Thank you so much.
Coming up, the Atlanta Hawks are finally whole again, and they have won 7 games in a row. How exactly are they doing it? Can the Hawks get their defense back to a respectable place? But first, a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. Because look, it's the new year, so that means New Year's resolutions. If yours is about getting fit or eating healthier, make sure you include Built Bar in your New Year's plan. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, honestly, maybe even better than a candy bar. Built Bar makes it so easy to stick to your New Year's resolutions because it tastes so good, you're going to want to eat it. Unlike other protein bars, which can be chalky or gritty or the consistency is just a little bit off. And don't even get me started on the flavors that Built Bar has. So many great flavors to choose from. Strawberry, mint brownie, peanut butter, cookies and cream, my personal favorite, coconut brownie chunk. You can't go wrong with a single bar on their menu. And you can check them out. Just visit built.com and use promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your very next order of the best tasting protein bars on the market. Again, that's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com. And continuing on here at Locked On NBA, where we thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. The NBA trade deadline is Thursday, February 10th at 3 p.m. Eastern time, and the Locked On NBA podcast will be covering it live from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Join Kim Becker, John Corrales, and Locked On Fantasy Basketball host Josh Lloyd to get analysis of every blockbuster move. Subscribe to Locked On NBA YouTube and turn your notifications on so you know when they go live. Joining us now is Brad Rowland of Locked On Hawks. Brad, fresh off a win against the Los Angeles Lakers, extending their win streak to 7 in a row. What has been the key for this Atlanta Hawks team over this recent stretch of play?
I think it's a lot of different things, which is not a sexy answer necessarily, but I think kind of having the team back and healthy is number one for me. Having their full complement of players, really for the first time in like 2 years. Even last year, as they went to the conference finals, they never were healthy at the same time. And the last couple of games, they've been healthy all the way through. They've had their best personnel defensively, which kind of leads to better results, because that was really the problem in the first half of the season, was the Hawks just couldn't get stops with any regularity. So it's a lot of different things. It's a lot of health factors for sure, but basically, it's two-way play. They have to be able to defend, and with personnel being a key part of defense, having everybody back has been huge.
I'm glad you highlight the defense here, because you know I've been a little concerned with the drop-off in the Hawks' performance on that side of the basketball, right? They weren't exactly, you know, defensive juggernauts last season, but, you know, middle of the pack, kind of respectable, 18th overall defensive rating. This year, plummeting all the way down to 27th. How much of that has just been because of the personnel not being there versus are you seeing anything else that is causing a slippage on that side of the basketball?
I think it's been a little bit of personnel and a little bit of just not performing well. Like at one point in the season on my podcast, I went through like player for player and like, okay, is this player performing up to their level of expectations on defense? And basically across the board, the answer was no. And that's just my own evaluation, but it also was guys not playing particularly well, not a lot of cohesion. In this winning streak, they've won 7 games in a row. They've been allowing about 108 points per 100 possessions, which is top 10 level in the league. And they're not going to be that good. I think last year is more of like a leading spot where they would be defensively, whereas like middle of the pack. Last season, it was Clint Capela kind of carrying a huge workload for them and kind of covering up for a lot of sins. And this year, he's not been quite as good. He's still been good. He's still a plus defender at center. He's just not like defensive player of the year caliber like he was a year ago. But if you go down the roster, like they were playing without probably two of the three of Capela, Onyeka Okongwu, their second year big man, and DeAndre Hunter, who are three, I would say pretty clearly their three best defenders. And if they only have one of those guys available, it really, really hurts them. So it's kind of a combination of not having their better defenders and also having some of the guys who are more, I would say, average defenders playing well below that. Like Bogdanovich this year has been pretty shaky defensively, playing guys like Lou Williams, Danilo Gallinari off the bench a lot. Those guys are bad defenders. So it's kind of a mix of all those things in particular. But winning also breeds defensive effort, which is you can never kind of tell which side of that has more to do with the other. Like when you win, is it because you play better defense or because you're winning, you're dialed in more on defensively? So there's lots of different factors in play, but the results have been pretty good recently.
You mentioned Onyeka Okongwu there. He's a guy that's, you know, he missed, you know, big chunk of the season already, but back in the rotation, again, mentioning the Hawks kind of being whole for one of the first times in a long time. What has his play meant kind of in that backup five role behind Clint Capela?
he's been huge. I mean, he was fantastic on Sunday in their win against the Lakers. I think he had 16 points in like 21 minutes. He was just flying around. He's a play finisher. He's really versatile too. Like, there's this movement, I'm sure you're not surprised, when it was a former lottery pick, there's this movement now in Hawks land that, you know, he's better than Capella. He should be starting. He should be playing 30 minutes a game. And he's really good. I've always loved Okongwu. I had him in my top five in that draft class. Like, he's an awesome prospect, and he's already a really good player. He still has some limitations. Like, he's kind of small, and rebounding is not his best thing in the world right now, but he's really mobile. He's a great finisher. And the biggest thing for me is that now they can play 48 minutes of high-level defense at center. And for this roster, the way it's constructed with Trae Young and some of their perimeter guys, they got to have good center play defensively, and they now have it for 48 minutes between Capella and Okongwu. So having him back has been huge. And even on Sunday, like, he closed. He played the whole fourth quarter. He played over Capella, which was okay with me. He was playing great. And that's a pitch that Nate McMillan can now throw, where they can go a little smaller, a little bit more mobile, and have his energy and speed be out there, and they kind of match up well with smaller teams.
Bogdan Bogdanovic, he's also a guy that's missed, you know, a little bit of time, been in and out of the lineup, back now, you know, handful of games under his belt, but, you know, he's missed time with the right knee sore. That's kind of a plethora of you know, injuries that have kept him out of the lineup. What's been the, you know, how difficult, I should say, has it been for him to really catch any semblance of rhythm this season with the extended periods of time that he keeps, you know, finding himself missing?
Yeah, I think that's a good point that you're making there, because, you know, dating back to the playoffs last year, he had this incredible run the second half of last season, which kind of went under the radar because the Hawks were winning so well overall, and the attention was paid to Trey and all that stuff, as it should have been. But Bogdanovic was out of his mind in the second half of last season. I think short of Steph Curry, he might have been the best shooter in the world for like 3 months. He shot 50% from three for like 30 games. It was kind of incredible. But then he got banged up in the playoffs. He was kind of dragging his leg around in the playoffs, then had an offseason surgery, and then hasn't been the same guy physically this year. I'm not sure if it's all solved now, but he missed those 5-6 games recently. He's come back. He looks better, not quite all the way to the same level, but having him around as a guy who hunts his own shot, he's very aggressive. The Hawks have a lot of good shooters, but they don't have a lot of like aggressive scores on the perimeter. It's Trae Young. But then you have guys like Hunter and Herter, who are good players, but are not always like going to go after their own shot. Bogdanovic hunts his own shot, and I think it's a good thing to have him on the second unit. This has been working recently with him coming off the bench. McMillan kind of talked about this week, like, we're going to leave it how it is, and they're winning, so that's kind of what happens when that happens. But I'll be interested to see how they handle that, because last year he was a starter. He's making big money, and he's not starting right now. And I think it's working, but he's got to be the same guy that he was last year, both offensively and even defensively, where he's not this stalwart, but he can't be a huge liability either.
So what is the Hawks' kind of biggest need rolling into the NBA trade deadline, and how active are you expecting them to be at the trade deadline this year?
It's really interesting. If you asked me this 2 weeks ago, I was much more confident the Hawks might make a bigger move, honestly. And now they've won 7 games in a row, and it might be difficult internally, externally, to pull the trigger on a big move when they're hot and this same core made their run last year in kind of similar fashion. I'm not saying that they're going to make the conference finals, because they probably won't do that. But they do. It's a lot harder to like make one of those like wholesale change kind of moves in the middle of a hot streak, and that shouldn't necessarily matter. Like, in the grand scheme of things, winning 7 games in a row should not change your franchise trajectory. But it is just practically in the real world hard to make a big move when you're doing that. Now, they kind of already made a trade with Cam Reddish. It just was a month early, and that was honestly the only guy on the team that I was pretty confident would be traded before the deadline. There are other guys that are available for sure, but one of the things that makes the Hawks difficult and also really interesting in trade stuff is that they don't have a huge weakness. They're really deep, and they don't have a position where it's like, okay, they have to do better here. That's a strength. It's also a challenge sometimes because they are so deep. So consolidation trade is a big term that's been thrown around here for a long time. Those are hard deals to do, though. So I think I've gone from like thinking they're definitely going to do something to now I'm not sure if they're going to. I'm not sure if they even should, depending on what it is.
Last thing here, Brad, before we let you go, what are you hoping to see more of out of the Hawks, you know, in this second half of the season? Something that maybe you haven't seen out of this team to this point?
Short of health, I mean, that's the big thing that everybody wants to see from every team. But mostly, I want to see how they continue to defend, and particularly defend on the perimeter. I know I talked about it before, but their perimeter defense in particular was kind of ghastly at times this year, and it's been better recently. But there's a baseline you have to be a contending level, you know, top level playoff team. And last year they found it on defense. And this year they haven't had it for very long. So if they could put together some more stretches where this winning streak has been good for that, but give me 2 weeks, give me 3 weeks, give me 4 weeks, give me 6 weeks of quality defense. And then it's a lot easier to buy in, because as good as they are on offense, everybody knows that they're top three in offense in the league this year. You can't be 25th in defense and go anywhere. So I think they know that internally. They preach that internally. But can they defend for long stretches?
Defense has been a big topic of this conversation, Brad. Realistically, where do you paint this team when they're fully healthy, when they've got all their guys on the floor? How good do you think they can be defensively?
I think it's more like where they were a year ago, where they finished, I think, like 17th or 18th in defense. They're not going to be top 10. This is not a personnel team that has that kind of talent on defense. You're building around Trae Young, and you're not perfect everywhere else either, but you can't be in the bottom five. It's like, get to average should be the goal. I think average defense should be the goal, and that's realistic, but you'll settle for top 20, and that won't get you killed, especially when if you maintain this top three offense, that gives you a lot of grace, because if you're that truly elite on offense, you can be shaky on defense. You just can't be terrible.
Yeah, just can't be a bottom five team on defense, because that's pretty much a death sentence or a lottery sentence in this case. But you're going to have us covered for everything Hawks basketball over at Locked On Hawks. Brad, appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, the Washington Wizards have lost five games in a row, including blowing a 35-point lead against the LA Clippers. Are things over in Washington? Is it time to move on from Bradley Beal? We'll get there in just one moment. And final segment here at Locked On NBA Monday. As always, thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. Now, for your second listen, go check out Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all of your gambling needs. Make a little bit of money with Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. It's free and available on all platforms. Joining us now is one half of the Locked On Wizards podcast, Ed Oliver. Ed, after such a promising start to the season for this Wizards team, they're now 23-26, just outside of the play-in tournament, riding a five-game losing streak, including, unfortunately, a blown 35-point lead against the LA Clippers that David Aldridge referred to as the most pathetic performance that he'd ever seen in almost 40 years of being around and covering the Washington Wizards. Ed, what's been the biggest change in how the Wizards started the season to where they find themselves at right now?
I would definitely say defense. When we started out 10-3, we played really well defensively. Offensively, we weren't a good three-point shooting team, and we were slow in pace. We didn't have a lot of fast break points either. But I would say the chemistry. The chemistry is not working well. Bradley Beal and Spencer Dinwiddie, when they play with each other, they don't play well. Spencer Dinwiddie plays really, really well. He averages about 23 points when Bradley Beal does not play. And then when Bradley Beal and Spencer play together, he's averaging about 10 points per game. So there's a disconnect there. There's a lot of guys that need playing time, and it looks like they're trying to showcase guys before the trade deadline. Montrezl Harrell, Hollow Netto, Aaron Holiday, Bertans, different guys like that. And we just got Rui and Thomas Bryant back. So we have about 11 or 12 guys that are fighting for minutes right now. Daniel Gafford now was benched against the Grizzlies. So it's just a lot of guys and only one basketball to go around. Bradley Beal's not playing at a high level this year either. He probably will not be making the All-Star game. He made the All-Star game the past two seasons.
You know, I'm glad you brought up kind of the dynamic between Beal and Dinwiddie, because, you know, on paper, you think that duo would actually probably have some success working with each other, but Dinwiddie especially has just been, you know, really struggling, and especially over the course of this recent losing streak. Is there a better way for this Wizards team to utilize him? Maybe, you know, bring him off the bench as like a sixth man?
I think so. You look at his time in Brooklyn with the Nets when he played with D'Angelo Russell, and he played with Caris LeVert and different guys, even played with Kyrie Irving when Kyrie was there for that 1 year, or when Spencer and Kyrie were there for that one season. Spencer did his best work coming off the bench as a sixth man. Now, he had a couple good games when, you know, Kyrie was injured and Kevin Durant didn't play, so he was able to step up when other guys were out. And that's kind of the sense here, you know, when Bradley Beal's out, that's when he plays better. So I think he would be better suited to come off the bench and go up against some backup point guards in that second unit where he would be able to excel and play well. And he is coming back from the ACL injury, so he still doesn't look 100%. They're athletically, but honestly, when Bradley Beal doesn't play, it looks like he's a different guy. He looks more upbeat and more athletic for some reason. So I just think the chemistry with him and Bradley Beal just hasn't worked out. But to answer your question, yes, I think it would be better to see him come off of the bench.
You mentioned so many different guys kind of coming back into the lineup and trying to get minutes allocated for everybody. And I think one of the storylines as of late has been, you know, obviously Thomas Bryant making his way back into the lineup after the successful, you know, rehab and everything. But it's come at the expense of minutes for Daniel Gafford. What's been going on with kind of that fight for minutes at the center spot? You've also got Montrezl Harrell back there. Like what is happening on the back lines as far as trying to allocate the minutes for those guys?
Yeah, so it's been a really interesting dynamic there. So Daniel Gafford, who is our starter for the majority of the season, he got a DNP, a coach's decision DNP, last night against the Memphis Grizzlies, where we lost exactly by 20 points on Saturday night. And he's been our best rim protector, and he's been our best rebounder as well. He's been our best defensive big, and it was really a head scratcher because the Memphis Grizzlies got 60 rebounds to our 37. Steven Adams got 10 offensive rebounds, which is just incredible. And Montrezl Harrell, he's a great offensive guy, but you know, sometimes there's mismatches because he's 6'7" at best against other centers that are 7 feet tall. So Thomas Bryant and Gafford and Montrez, they've been fighting for minutes. It's hard to play three centers, especially in today's game. So Wes Unseld Jr. said he was looking for more energy, but that kind of didn't make a lot of sense because Daniel Gafford is an energy big. So it's three guys fighting for minutes. I do think one of the three, Daniel Gafford signed an extension, so he cannot be traded due to the CBA rules before February 10th, the trade deadline. So one of the two centers between Thomas Bryant and Montrezl Harrell most likely will be traded before February 10th.
That's a good jumping off point because I want to get into the trade deadline stuff, but I will say I thought that Gafford has done a really a solid and kind of an exceptional job really filling in that, you know, in that five spot in the absence of Thomas Bryant. And I feel for the guy, you know, wanting to get Thomas Bryant reacclimated, get him back involved with the team, but for Gafford to, you know, be the guy getting kind of shafted and losing out on his minutes and realistically a rotation spot potentially, that's tough to stomach. But you mentioned, you know, one of the other guys may be out the door. Who's on the trading block going into the deadline for this Wizards team? Is it everybody? Is it kind of a question of what do we do now? Has the panic button been hit for this Wizards team to where there's a potential for Bradley Beal to be on the way out? Are they looking to maybe blow things up and move on from him? Or is it, you know, can we retool and put the right pieces around Bradley Beal and try and get this thing back on track?
Yeah, so there was actually a report from Zach Lowe that came out on Saturday afternoon. He said that everybody is available except for Bradley Beal. So Bradley Beal is the only body; he's the only person on the team that is not on the trade block at the moment. So as of right now, Tommy Shepard wants to keep Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal is eligible for a max deal, which would be 5 years, $245 million, once the season ends. So he wants to build around Bradley Beal. That's what we're hearing from the general manager, Tommy Shepard, for the Washington Wizards. So you know, we'll see. It's interesting. I mean, everybody's on the block except for Bradley Beal and Daniel Gafford. So it's gonna be interesting to see how it goes. Building around Bradley Beal.
Is that the right call? Is that the right call to want to stay committed to Bradley Beal?
In my opinion, Bradley Beal, he's a great player. He's an all-star. He did make All-NBA last season, but I don't see him as a number one option. This year he certainly has not played like it. So if the goal is to win a championship, I don't see Bradley Beal being a number one option on a championship team.
So amidst, you know, all of this recent mess with the Wizards and the downtrend, unfortunately, in the standings, is there, you know, flashing sirens, panic button, you know, all the alarm bells ringing? Is there a silver lining that you can point to, something that is a positive thing that can be taken away at least recently?
Not a lot, to be honest. They're on a 5-game losing streak right now, and then they play the Bucks on TNT on Tuesday night. They play the Suns after that, and then we play the Nets. And we play the Sixers with Joel Embiid. So the next 5 games are against teams that are going to be contending for the championship. So it could easily be a 10-game losing streak in the next 5 games. Also, they just got bounced out of the 10th seed, so they're out of the play-in spot. Right now. So things are just in a downward spiral. Spencer Dinwiddie was quoted to say he's in an interesting situation. He spoke up a little bit earlier on this season, but what he said was not necessarily welcomed. So this was a quote from him talking about leadership, that guys were not happy with, you know, things that he said in the past. So the locker room looks it looks kind of lost right now. I'm not going to lie to you. There's a lot of chemistry issues. We've had KCP and Montrezl Harrell got into a fist fight. Davis Bertans and Denny Avdia got into a fight where they had to be held back. So there's been two scuffles already so far this season, and we're not even at the All-Star game yet. I know fights happen with every team, but right now it just looks like a lot of individuals. Bradley Beal was quoted to say it looks like guys are on agendas, right? Different agendas. We got guys on expiring deals. This is what Bradley Beal was quoted to say in an interview as well. So the chemistry is off right now. We're lacking leadership right now. We're lacking chemistry. Looks like guys are kind of on their own, doing their own thing right now. So there's really not much positive to say, honestly, with the Washington Wizards at the moment.
Oh man, I wanted to be able to extend the olive branch and like give you a lifeline there to maybe throw in something, chime in something of positive note. But right. You know, highlighting all those different things, I don't want to be too harsh on him because you know rookie campaign as a head coach, but how much of the blame at this point you know needs to be shouldered by Wes Unseld Jr. You know, has he lost the locker room at this point?
Yeah, we just made a podcast. We just made an episode. I want to say on Thursday, the question was, has Wes Unseld Jr. lost the locker room? And I think right now it kind of does look lost, to be honest. And I'm rooting for Wes. You know, his dad, Wes Unseld Sr., won our only franchise championship back in 1978. So I'm rooting for him. Of course, you know, the family connection. But he's a rookie coach, and his voice is not really being heard by the players right now. They're not listening to him right now. So we got a lot of veterans that have chips on their shoulders and guys who have egos, and it looks like they're not really connecting with Wes Unseld Jr. right now for some reason. If you watch the Clippers game where we were up 35 points and lost, Tyronn Lue made better adjustments than Wes Unseld Jr. He took Reggie Jackson out the game. He took Eric Bledsoe out the game. He sat down Zubac, and some of the younger guys were playing better. Isaiah Hartenstein was scoring a lot against us. Luke Kennard hit the game-winning shot, you know, and we lost to a team without Paul George and without Kawhi Leonard. And, you know, a lot of that was on coaching, making adjustments, not sending Spencer Dinwiddie, not playing Daniel Gafford more. So a lot of that is on Wes Unseld Jr., just making simple adjustments and simple rotation moves as well. I think Wes Unseld Jr. has dropped the ball in a couple of games this year so far.
Well, you're going to keep us posted on everything Wizards over at Locked On Wizards. Ed, appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Yep. Thank you for having me on.
That's going to do it for another Monday edition of Locked On NBA. If you haven't done so yet, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google, the brand new Odyssey app, free and available on all platforms. Also, check out the Locked On NBA YouTube channel. Go to YouTube, search Locked On NBA, like, comment, subscribe, all of that. But as always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On NBA, the biggest stories with the local experts.